Deliver.
Hello, world. I'm your host, Nate Liss. You can find me on Twitter at An Outraged Jew. And with me, of course, my co-host, you know him, Ryan Lopes. You can find him on Twitter at StillRyan5. This show has been soaring lately, Ryan. The response has been incredible. But if for some reason last week you were looking for the episode and you could not find it, that is because it featured the one and only Matt Kelly. And it aired on his network, the Roto Underworld Network. So go check that out. That was a good episode. Microphone Catastrophe Part 3, 4.
Crisis was ultimately averted, though, in a sense.
Kind of. Yeah, it's like instead of getting airdropped, you know, from a plane and landing in the top of a volcano, you landed in a tree.
Right.
It's not safely. The ground. Yeah, I mean, a little bit. And once again, man, the feedback is always appreciated. iTunes reviews that I've seen recently are pretty hilarious. Ryan, you should check them out. We love all the activity of the listening audience. I mean, we're pretty active members of Twitter and social media and all that. So hit us up, hit Ryan up, and we'll definitely get back to you. Recently, Ryan dropped his 2020 wide receiver prospect rankings.
Ooh.
The graphic hit the neighborhood.
It did.
And you know what, Ryan? It must be good because not that much pushback.
It was relatively tame. There was a couple comments, but nothing dramatic. I think we are on the cusp of a fantastic group. I mean, I feel like there's you know, most years there's, you know, people are looking ahead and it's all, oh man, this class. But this is the one that's been circled for a little while. We're gonna have the 2020 running back ranks drop in at some point in the very near future. That's the group that this class was, you know, everyone was kind of dialed in on. But as our boy Matt Kelly was so kind enough to throw on the timeline and comment on the 2020 wide receiver class is really the one that's gonna just bring this whole class in general over the top, man. Some really, really good looking kids.
Yeah, it's a good group. And as far as that running back ranking, the graphic's pretty much done, and I've seen it, and it's spicy. Ryan, ooh, once again, nailed it with this thing. Ooh. And you can probably look forward to that thing dropping.
Yell at me, man. I want to be yelled at. Tell me I'm wrong.
He's a masochist. Please. Just, you know,
that's what I want. That's what I'm this for.
He likes it.
Do that. Do that. Shame.
Gosh.
The shame bell, bro. I want that.
Ryan,
I want that.
It looks so good on you. So we're going to drop that towards the end of the week here, probably right after the 4th of July. On the topic of the website, I swear to God it's coming. I'm not lying about this.
I love that
topic.
This
is a sore subject once again, but we're going to have the articles, you know, video work, graphic work, dynasty rankings, Devy rankings. I swear to God it's coming. I meet with the web designer. I'm sorry. Ryan and I are doing everything we can. There's only so much we're capable of. And before we jump into this episode, I want to address a RotoWorld blurb that I read because I think it is absolutely hilarious.
What do we got?
So recently, Josh Doctson was quoted as saying he thinks he will be a free agent in 2020.
I wonder what made him think that.
I mean, is there any reason to believe that he's not going to be a free agent in 2020, Ryan?
Dude, I'm not gonna say that Josh Doctson is on that Alex Mattison scale, but Josh Doctson is a reoccurring topic, a player prospect that, dude, for better or for worse, and it's always for worse. It seems like this poor guy. He's been thrown on the show, and you've done your darnest to drag him through the coals as often as you can.
Yes.
Josh Doctson, man. You know, it hasn't worked in Washington.
I don't know where it's going to work for Josh Doctson. I mean, he's a guy that's going to end up on a roster probably as a third wide receiver, and maybe that's his role in the NFL. Maybe if he can stay healthy, that's his spot. I don't want to talk about Josh Doctson.
Yeah, what are we doing here, man? Josh Doctson, that's gross.
You started dropping analysis, and you got me all hung up. I want to talk about Debo Samuel.
Ooh.
Your number 12 overall prospect in this class, and a player that the Breakout Finder loves. He is currently ranked number 9 overall in this class. Tell us about Deebo Samuel.
Bro, we were talking offline here, and it's gotta get the people excited that here we are, July 2nd.
Yes.
You know, before a nice long weekend for most folks here. And you and I both know for damn sure rookie drafts have come and gone. But you got the breakout finder boys in the lab putting in that hard work. We got two tiers out of the way. This is it, Nate. We're slowly approaching the top of the mountain right here, and the climb starts with Deebo Samuel. Deebo, we talked about a couple weeks ago when we were talking about the second tier. We were bringing up Jalen Hurd, who was an interesting selection for a couple reasons. But the player that the Niners selected before Jalen Hurd, fourth overall pick in the second round, a player that was on everyone's radar kind of pre-combine, pre, you know, all-star circuit, all that stuff. Everyone knew about him in South Carolina. Showed up in at the Senior Bowl and was just dusting the opposing secondary all week. So at that point, it was kind of wheels up for Deebo. If you weren't a fan before, you kind of got reminded or refreshed at the Senior Bowl. 85th percentile spark X score. So does enough athletically. So again, we're going back to the boxes. It's the athleticism. It's the tape. And this is a player that landed in a pretty interesting spot for me. I don't want to spend too much time because he more or less came up in conversation a couple weeks ago. But the Niners, we discussed the pecking order, so to speak. We know that offense is going to funnel through George Kittle at the tight end spot. Their backfield is three players deep that could feasibly pitch in. Spent a high pick on Dante Pettis last year, but again, it goes back to just the talent. You mentioned his breakout finder score. The breakout finder model likes Deebo Samuel. There is a lot to like about him. I'm high on him because I kind of like that Niners offense. I like Kid Chaney coaching. I like the idea of maybe a healthy Jimmy G. To your point, you brought it up last time. We really don't know what we have in Jimmy G. at quarterback. So that's a fair hesitation to all this. I get it. But in general, if Jimmy G is healthy, and the pieces seem to be there, it's going to be interesting to see for me how Deebo kind of works his way throughout this roster and kind of gets himself some of that volume that we've seen him carry before at the college level. So
what we really liked about Deebo Samuel too, and the reason that the breakout finder does like him as well, not like any stellar volume production, not a raw stat machine, especially with injuries and the games that he played. But Deebo Samuel's a super versatile player. We've talked about this before. You know, he's got the kick return ability, he's got the rushing ability, and his dynamic score is reflective of that. And Deebo Samuel's actually kind of right there historically with Marquise Lee in terms of his dynamic production. So when you think about kind of his capabilities on the field, there is a little bit of that Marquise Lee kind of style to his game. But you know what, number 12, an early second round pick in the league, this is a guy that's kind of a sneaky play because he's just not a sexy name in this draft class, but it's definitely a guy that you want to target in your rookie drafts, which are already over. So number...
which is so inconsequential, but here we are.
Yeah, we're appropriately. All right, man, we're going to fly through this one. Yeah. Here's a player that had an injury and surgery, didn't perform at the combine, undersized, went to a team with a not very accurate mobile quarterback on a team that typically prefers the run first. So Marquise Brown goes to Baltimore, the only receiver taken outside of, what was it, N'Keal Harry in the first round of the NFL draft.
Yep.
And he's got a lot to prove because really if Marquise Brown hits, he's going to be an extreme outlier. So what's your take on Brown?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of hit it high level. He does have some pretty obvious red flags working against him. Much like Deebo, Hollywood Brown came up in conversation a couple weeks ago when we were talking about Miles Boykin on that Baltimore offense. The idea behind these rankings of these Baltimore skill position players is that Lamar Jackson takes a a second year leap. Their ranking is obviously contingent upon what Lamar Jackson does. I know you're a fan of Jackson. I'm a fan of Jackson. The thought is that he does make that leap, and therefore these guys are going to rise with him. He is going to carry these pass catchers along. You know, Hollywood Brown was polarizing for some of the reasons that you just shared. Again, whether it was the injury coming out, a wide receiver who depends on the speed, you know, suffering I think it was the Liz Frank injury. Yep. So that, again, that I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to pretend to have access to these medical reports, but on paper, that doesn't bode well for me. So some people, you know, had a little, you know, X mark against his name for that reason. The size, you covered most of that for us, but what film watchers, and like-minded folks saw was arguably the best route runner in this class, someone that can obviously beat you deep. Again, when he's healthy, he's going to hurt you with the speed, a lid lifter in every sense of the word. You probably saw some DeSean Jackson comparisons. So if the stars align, there are questions about him. Again, so this ranking might seem a little bit aggressive to some folks, but the idea is that Lamar Jackson does take that next step, and he's kind of that. You know, I'm not going to say go-to target, but he does get fed some of that necessary volume to kind of put him in this first tier.
What was really weird to me too about his profile, I mean, different from many other guys that were of similar speed scores or, you know, relative size, is that his dynamic score on Breakout Finder is a zero. No kick return, no punt return, no rushing. Just a very odd sort of fact when you look at this guy's profile, but I mean, there's not much more that needs to be said. I mean, he's the first receiver taken. Arguably, again, the film guys unanimously agree that he's the most polished route runner in this class. I mean, think about what people thought about Sterling Shepard a few years ago. I mean, different body type, different size, but a guy that film watchers really loved the route ability of, and we've seen Sterling Shepard really flourish in the league. So if Marquise Brown can put the speed together with the route running ability and get open, and Lamar Jackson takes that step forward, maybe there's something here. But he really does feel like one of the more true outliers, and you're really betting on history not repeating itself with a guy like Marquise Brown hitting. But a player that I think we agree is going to hit and is already way ahead of the other wide receiver drafted in the same draft to the same team, Andy Isabella, the great white hope to Arizona, man. I mean, man, Andy Isabella, God bless you. I mean, absolutely put Hakeem Butler in a body bag, and here we are. Bro, talk
Dude,
to me about him.
It hurts to discuss Andy Isabella because I truly do like Andy Isabella. I liked him as a prospect coming out. I absolutely love the landing spot. My ranking here should definitely speak to that. But again, it's bittersweet because your boy was I was out there, man, with the Hakeem Butler flag, waving it proudly, and again it didn't really kind of play out as I would have hoped. And again, we, much like these previous two players that you and I just discussed, we kind of hit on Andy Isabella a couple weeks ago when we were talking about Butler. So there's not a ton more to say. We know he's got legit track speed, legit collegiate production. Everyone talks about that game against Georgia that he had, you know, so he was, you know, obviously a UMass kid level of competition, but then he goes and shows out against Georgia. So push that narrative aside, you know, coming out athletically, has the draft capital, has the production, has the landing spot. If you had Andy Isabella in your top five, in your dynasty rookie rankings, I'm not necessarily going to argue against you. This kid checks literally every single box, that you're looking for in a high, you know, a high early round draft selection here. So really a pretty clean prospect, a player that's gotten a lot of hype. Obviously we're coming at this from the dynasty rookie kind of lens, but you're probably going to see people invest in Andy Isabella this year as far as season long leagues. You know, obviously a later round pick, but a player that if Kyler Murray gets off the ground and starts running immediately, man, and this offense starts elevating, we're already expecting a really big, you know, tempo increase and plays run increase in Arizona. So Andy Isabella could be a pretty early factor and a beneficiary to all that.
It's ridiculous. I mean, sky's the limit for him. And, you know, there's people out there that are going to talk about that Georgia game and be like, man, he didn't do anything to the second half, man. Georgia's resting on its starters.
They all sound like that, too, when they're gonna talk down on someone like that, too.
I want to point out the fact, too, that he was – I think he had four catches for almost 50 yards on DeAndre Baker in that game before they started doing things when he totally trashed him, and that's a guy that went in the first round. So we got to put some emphasis on that. But, yeah, Andy Isabella, look, level of competition, not good. One of the worst scores amongst – the breakout finder group, but the things that do matter in here, yards per reception, his best season market share, 45. I mean, that's one of the higher upper percentile numbers in this group. Dynamic score, way up there. So this is a guy that can do it all. I mean, you look back at the collegiate production, like you touched on, last year was a big year. He was a guy that was not just being funneled the ball, but was making big plays down the field. Matt Kelly always talks about Andy Isabella's double move. I'm not necessarily on the double move thing, but what I love about Andy Isabella is he has elite speed to go with a possession ability in an offense that you touched on could be high powered, high volume. And, you know, most of us assume that Christian Kirk is going to be the future number one here, you know, and maybe there'll be some fluctuation, but there's absolutely a role for Andy Isabella. I mean, he is the big play threat in this offense now as the number one speed guy, and I expect him to do some big things. He may be more of a best ball option initially in Arizona, especially with Kyler Murray's ability, but again, the sky is the limit in an offense like this, and everybody obviously was already on the Andy Isabella train. The other train that most people were on, and I don't feel like your rank here is wrong because of the landing spot. Had this guy gone to Green Bay? Had this guy gone to New Orleans? I mean, I realize both these teams have an incumbent number one, but the number ones on those teams have much better quarterback play and offenses to throw the ball plenty more than this guy. A.J. Brown lands in Tennessee, an absolute fucking bummer location. Like, I was so pumped for A.J. Brown to land somewhere spectacular. Literally, almost anywhere else other than Tennessee. I mean, this was one of the worst spots, in my opinion. But we got to trust the talent, right?
Yeah. This is we talked about some players here that the breakout finder loved, obviously. A.J. Brown, the number one overall player. Yeah. In the breakout finder's model here, man. So a player that, again, if we're talking about checking boxes – A.J. Brown is checking all the boxes. The only you know, red flag, the only ding to his score here, to his ranking, as you said, is that Tennessee landing spot. Tennessee brought in Adam Humphries in the offseason. They have Corey Davis, who's operating as their de facto wide receiver one. They put the offense on Derrick Henry's back last season, so you kind of figure that they're going to maybe kind of pick up where they left off, and Derrick Henry's going to get that volume. The offense is going to continue to run through the ground game. And much like the Baltimore skill position players and the Baltimore quarterback situation, Marcus Mariota's game hasn't really hit that point where people are confident that he's going to be able to support, you know, multiple skill position players here. His game's been up and down himself. So the hope is that Mariota kind of, you know, is able to stay healthy and puts it all together this season and takes that jump and has that consistent run of play for the next 2-3 years, whatever the case may be. If you're investing highly in A.J. Brown here, again, you led off with it and you said it well. The only thing that we're kind of looking back on here, and it is an absolute bummer, is that landing spot, because A.J. Brown, as far as athleticism, production, you know, teammate score, he was number one overall for very good reasons. So a phenomenal prospect, and just one that we certainly wish landed elsewhere. But I guess his immediate short-term hope just rests in Marcus Mariota's hands.
Oh, yes, and Mariota's precious hands on a team that ranked 31st in pass attempts in 2018.
Yucky.
It's poopy is the only word that really comes to mind that eloquently describes the situation. But, yeah, I mean, and this has been spoken about to ad nauseum, but looking at his profile, you know, as a freshman, it was competition there, but still 412 yards. It's below the threshold that I typically run with on Breakout Finder for freshman production. But then as a sophomore, monster year in the SEC. I mean, we go back and look at Juju Smith as a sophomore. That was his big year. You look at this production in the SEC. I mean, we all know. Look at the shirt that Ryan's wearing, the jersey. I mean, he knows. It's the SEC, for Christ's sakes. And then you look at his junior year, And he steps it up another level with DeMarcus Lodge, a guy that a lot of people thought might be a third round guy. With DK Metcalf, a guy that goes at the end of the second round who had top 10, you know, beliefs early on. I mean, a freak athlete. So the teammate scores you alluded to very high because of the players that he played with. But this feels like, and we've talked about this before, it feels like his floor is as high as any other receiver in this class. We're going to talk about another one, but in my opinion, he has the second highest floor in the whole class, and arguably his ceiling, if the opportunity is going his way, could be as good as anybody in this class. It's just the landing spot was super duper unfortunate. Okay, now. This is very important. This one right here is
very, very,
very
serious podcast.
Very important because by now, most of you guys, it's too late to buy him, but we're here. You can't, there's nothing you can do about it.
We're here.
His value is skyrocketed because the running back in front of him they've talked about the injuries and that they may, you know, reel back some of his opportunity. And we know that this player is explosive. Darrell Henderson goes to the Los Angeles Rams. Todd Gurley, he's got arthritis in the knee, I've heard, and amongst other issues. I don't know what the long-term implications of that are. I'm not a doctor. If I was, I wouldn't be doing this podcast. I'd be running a practice. I'd be doing something important. But I'm here. I just couldn't handle those school loans.
Fair enough.
Talk to me about Darrell Henderson.
Yeah, there's a couple players here kind of back-to-back that we definitely missed the boat on, man. This is it's funny looking back on it, man. Obviously the Darrell Henderson hype you know got started right away when all these girly reports surfaced, and obviously they're still floating out there. I was listening to a podcast with Uncle Sig and Lord Reeves. They dropped a couple weeks ago. Rich Rerod, Roto World, was on the couch with Sigmund Bloom, and they were talking about we got these preseason games coming up, man, and these training camps. If Henderson, you know, starts to break off these 50-yard runs, man, 60-yard runs, man, his stock in, again, we're speaking about, you know, dynasty rookie drafts here, but shifting to the redraft, you know, scope of things, man, he starts breaking off these runs. Nate talked about it before, averaging over eight yards a carry in college, man, back-to-back seasons. We know that Darrell Henderson is explosive as hell. So if this kid shows out, man, he's already kind of, you know, everyone's, you know, pushing him to that RB1 status already, given the questions that surround Todd Gurley. But if this kid starts, you know, reeling off a couple of these highlight runs this offseason or this preseason, man, he's already shot up boards, but man, the sky is the absolute limit for him in his rookie season. Just again, given that landing spot. As Nate said, we talked about it before, neither of us have access to these medical reports, so just pure speculation, just like everybody else. The Gurley situation doesn't seem great. It hasn't gotten better. We know where it was last year. We know he missed time. We know that offense still ran through the ground without much issue. I won't pretend like there's not a drop off skill wise from Todd Gurley to the next guy, but the fact is that offense continued to run. We know the whole running backs don't matter thing. So Henderson, man, is a really, really interesting buy, just because that window could really be, you know, forced open, you know, very, very soon. Again, speaking about bittersweet moments and talking about these prospects and stuff, man, John Kelly was my guy, man. John Kelly's gone, bro. John Kelly's Toast. Gone. He's never coming back. We've lost John Kelly. It's sad. It's sad for John, but I'm very happy for the young Mr. Henderson, who again could get a shine on here very, very soon if the medical reports aren't very favorable.
When I think about Darrell Henderson in this offense and an injury to Todd Gurley, I feel like I get hit with a water balloon in the pants. Like the idea of Darrell Henderson behind this O-line with this offense, with the creativity of McVay. They've already talked about the fact that they wanted to be one of the more dynamic offenses. They want to run different personnel. I cited this on Twitter once before. Amongst the whole league, excluding Cordarrelle Patterson and the New England offense, The Rams ranked number two in wide receiver rushing attempts last year. So just think about that in the context of what does he add as a dimension to an offense that was already looking for ways to get dynamic players involved in the game. I mean, even without an injury to Todd Gurley, I think that he could have weekly RB3 type upside, you know, as a 10 to 12 touch type of guy. If Gurley goes down, I mean, sky's the limit right behind that O-line with that explosiveness. I mean, you touched on it. Darrell Henderson in college was a revelation. I mean, the guy was unreal. And I don't care what conference he went to. I realize people are going to be like, Nate, you're always shitting on small conferences. Yeah, you know what? You're right. I am. But
I haven't heard of your school, so I don't care.
The rule is, if you're going to come from a small conference, if you're going to come from a weak conference, dominate it. Dominate your competition. Validate that you are so much better than the sum of anyone else around you, your competition, whatever it is, that it's undeniable. This guy did that. And that's why I'm in support of Henderson. I mean, he's a stud. We've seen it. Look at last year, 15.5 yards per reception out of the backfield. So this is a guy that can line up outside as well. So very dynamic. I couldn't be higher on him. I'm excited for this. And in your rookie drafts, I mean, there is still an opportunity to buy. Look, the price is going to go way up from here. I mean, he might cost you a mid-first right now, an early first. And I'm not selling my 2020 stock. Ryan already talked about it. The running back graphic's going to drop. I would rather have most of the running backs next year than Darrell Henderson. But with that being said, Henderson landed in an unbelievable spot. He may be behind Gurley, but the team that he landed on is fantastic. I mean, this is the opposite of the situation with A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown landed in a pile of shit, and it's unfortunate because we have to watch him now, and we got to wait for Corey Davis to go somewhere else or Mariota to get a different arm. I don't know what the fuck's going to happen. All right, let's move on. Mecole Hardman recently, yeah. I tweeted Mecole Hardley because it sounds like Tyreek Hill's not going to get much of a suspension if you know, and sign an extension in KC. They don't care. Should we?
You had the Mecole Hardley tweet and your boy and mine, Matt Kelly came right underneath you, man. I might have had a Mecole Hardley knew you tweet right after that. So you can tell you guys are just lockstep, obviously buddies, obviously doing, you know, the Sonic Truth thing has you guys again just connected on a spiritual level. Love to see it. the Hardman buzz was really going, you know, a month or two ago, and you and I only are here right now to kind of pull back the curtain on it.
That's right.
The facts are that, you know, that window looked like it was opening up very, very quickly given the Chiefs moved up for him. You know, no one's going to compare him to Tyreek Hill athletically, you know, coming out of school. Hill's speed and just his overall, you know, electricity that he plays with, man, is just it's not fair for to him or to any prospect to kind of drop that comparison. But the draft capital says something, you know, the Chiefs staff under Andy Reid, which has been successful offensively, obviously saw something that, you know, maybe not mirrored, but closely paralleled or whatever the case may be to, what Hill was doing, you know, Hardman could bring some sort of level of that. We know that the production wasn't necessarily there in school, that whole Georgia offense. You and Matt Kelly dragged that Georgia offense. And when you guys were reviewing Riley Ridley over and over again, we know about that Georgia offense. We know about their pass catchers. Hardman was no different in that regard. But what Hardman does have is an 84th percentile Spark X score. He has the draft capital, and he landed in a really exciting offense, in an offense that is here now and could only, you know, ascend behind the arm of a young Patrick Mahomes too. So a lot to like there. However, as you just suggested, and as we're just talking about now, that everyone knows the Tyreek Hill, you know, suspension news might break, you know, before camp or shortly thereafter. It sounds, as Nate said, it sounds like, you know, maybe it's four games, maybe it's less, maybe it's a little bit more, but, you know, missing a whole year or even worse, doesn't sound like that's in the picture anymore. Again, neither of us have, inside sources or league information, anything like that. So we're just going off of whatever's on the timeline. But in the case of Hardman and his stock, it looked like, again, it looked like that lane was opening very, very favorably early on, you know, a handful of weeks back. Doesn't look like it's the case anymore, but it's still a good offense. There's obviously an investment there. They traded up for him again. So a lot to like, but doesn't look like we're going to get that super early, you know, return on investment.
I mean, because you brought him up, I feel obligated to mention Riley Ridley. Now, the tape grinders were sure that Riley Ridley was a lock for the first round. I mean, a lock. We got guys on the NFL Network that get paid to do this that were sure he was a lock. And the way that the teammate score works, without giving you the secret sauce, is that where a player's teammate is drafted is a factor in that score. It helps us put context to it. It's one portion of that score. What's really hilarious is after the draft, Mecole Hardman's draft position actually helped Riley Ridley more than Riley Ridley's ended up helping Mecole Hardman, right? I mean, it's just absolutely hysterical because Riley Ridley ended up on just a bad roster to end up on with a lot of wide receivers on it. He's dead. I'm not a fan of Riley Ridley. He's toast. But Mecole Hardman, Matt Kelly's right. Hardly knew you. I don't think, you know, we don't know what Sammy Watkins is. Kind of an X factor here, right? Sammy Watkins was one of the best collegiate prospects we've ever seen in terms of athleticism, you know, draft capital, college production, age-adjusted production. I mean, he had literally everything. He may be overall the greatest single prospect in terms of, you know, factors that we have ever seen. And now he's on some existential free thinker. I don't know where he's at. If you check
his tweets are something.
This dude is lost in the universe right now. I mean, he's way, way, way out there. So to say that Mecole Hardman it can't do anything in this offense because Tyreek Hill is in it, I don't believe that's necessarily true, but I think in the end, Mecole Hardman, you know, hindsight bias in the future may come back and stab me, but he may be more of a boom-bust type player, a guy that's more of a best ball option, where Tyreek Hill was that initially, but solidified himself as a weekly go-to receiver. Will we get there with Hardman? I don't know, but as you alluded to, they invested in him, and that means something. Was it a hedge against Tyreek Hill? Sure, people can drive that narrative. Maybe they saw something in him. Maybe they want to run an offense like this. We know that it's going to funnel the run game. We know that Travis Kelce is the 1B, you know, 1A option to Tyreek Hill. Outside of that, with one of the more dynamic, you know, pass throwers in the league in Patrick Mahomes, who's the ball going to, right? So there's something here. I mean, Mecole Hardman is not a useless asset by any means, but you know, us having hindsight bias here, it's funny because we can go, okay, all right, hold on. His upside may be capped. You know, it was much higher in theory before Tyreek Hill had the reduced suspension and the extension to his contract. And here we are today. But all I know is Riley Ridley is dead. He's toast. Don't buy Riley Ridley. Sell your Riley Ridley stock. Thanks, Bucky Brooks. So let's talk about Paris Campbell for a minute. Your number 6 overall prospect. Big fan of this guy. Big fan. Yeah. Maybe one of the best landing spots, if not the best landing spot. As a Russell Wilson fan and a fanboy of Seattle, people are always comparing Luck to Wilson. Man, there's no comparison. Russell Wilson's much better. But the fact is that the Colts are always going to be a pass-first team, and I think they were number 1 or number 2 last year. You know, when they added Devin Funchess and some other things, I'll let you touch on this. But Paris Campbell, man, should we like him still a lot, or have things changed since rookie drafts are over now?
No, he was a player that you and I know were you absolutely put me onto him. I think you kind of shed the light on him. You certainly did your part this past offseason. You know, definitely illuminated him for a lot of us out there. A player that we definitely agreed on in the end. Love the landing spot as you suggested as well. It's definitely wheels up for Paris Campbell. I do get a little bit of pause, at least short term, as you said. They brought in Devin Funchess, who always seems to be like just 21 years old and what if, you know, so he's still young enough. T.Y. Hilton, you know, kind of approaching that age apex that Kelly always talks about. They have a pair of tight ends that Andrew Luck likes to utilize as well. This could be the year for Marlon Mack, and Marlon Mack might hold on to this, you know, this potential breakout. And they're gonna, you know, maybe start siphoning some more of this offense through the ground. So there are some concerns about his, you know, immediate access to volume, and his potential, you know, mid to kind of long term ability to kind of hold on to that volume. The good thing is, as you said, it's an Andrew Luck led offense. Assuming he's healthy, they're gonna keep throwing the ball. You know, that volume should still be there. How that pie gets divided up eventually, if Marlon Mack is a real big hit, if they still have, you know, someone like Hines who's able to catch the ball out of the backfield as well. So there are some pretty enticing targets there. You know, so my fear in general just is that the pie isn't big enough. But we know with Campbell, I'm not even going to bring up the whole film and his ability as a route runner and stuff like that. We touched on that enough. 93rd percentile spark X score, so we know he's a phenomenal athlete. I'll personally bet on those players more often than not. You know, that athleticism is going to kind of find its way to the top, and you're going to figure out the rest and kind of build around those players. So landing spot, athleticism, draft capital, it's all there for Paris Campbell. I'm just kind of curious how and when he kind of gets a chance to kind of really kind of sink his teeth in and kind of hold on to, you know, that volume.
What's really interesting too, because, you know, the breakout finder doesn't necessarily value it the same way, but we had JJ Zacharyson on a few weeks back, and he talked about how senior year production for him was one of the biggest determining factors in a prospect. And Paris Campbell, you know, in the Big Ten for Ohio State, a big school with a lot of talented teammates on his roster, had a 90 catch, 1,000 plus yard season with 12 touchdowns. I mean, again, a dynamic player, has the kick return, had some rushing. I mean, the things that you want to see out of him. And all these factors are what made Paris Campbell the number four prospect in the breakout finder this year. You know, teammate score was a big one. And that kind of helps rationalize and explain what we saw from him, you know, the 2 years prior to this, you know, lack of production, you know, and people want to knock that, but we have to illuminate a light on that. But yeah, you're right. The question here is Paris Campbell going to get an opportunity in this offense? Look, they invested in him heavily. It likely this team ends up the number one throwing team in the league next year. Last year, number one was the Pittsburgh Steelers and Roethlisberger. Who knows? I don't know that they do that all over again with the departure of Antonio Brown and the addition of Moncrief and some other rookies. Maybe their style changes a little bit, but there is a great chance that this is the highest pass attempt team in the league, and you just want a piece of that pie. The reality, though, is Paris Campbell's still going to cost you a lot because of where he landed, despite the fact that, yes, we're going to see Jack Doyle come back. Yes, you know, Ebron's still there. Yes, you named Hines. Yes, T.Y. Hilton. Yes, they signed Devin Funchess. Lots of weapons there. So it's hard to say exactly how the pie gets divvied up, but that doesn't mean that his stock is dropping, you know, at all. So I'm still high on him. You're still high on him. Just the reality is he went to a good team, and it's a packed offense. Good Lord. So
what have I done? What have I done?
Let's rotate to a player that I think most of us agree is the number three running back in this class. Landed on a depth chart that doesn't necessarily have a ton of competition at the position right now. They invested in him, you know, heavily enough for a running back. If you're looking at the overlay right now, he's got fucking concrete blocks for feet, for God's sakes. Ran a 4.63. So Ryan, good. Tell him about David Montgomery.
David Montgomery, man, is a player that I didn't expect to have him here. I kind of figured he would work his way here. I know the league and obviously the league was higher on me than I was. I think I might have had a 4 or 5 round grade or something on him. So he landed and came off the board in the third. So not a dramatic difference where I had him versus where he actually went. But a third round investment is still notable enough, as you as you suggested. So checks that box. Doesn't necessarily, you know, jump off the boards athletically, but you know, again, the conversation pre-draft was his ability, you know, to turn out tough yards, and his ability, you know, after contact and behind that Iowa State offensive line that really doesn't mean much. So the idea is that he grinds out these tough yards, able to kind of create for himself, maybe not with, you know, eye popping agility, but he's just a grinder, right? He's able to kind of work and kind of generate those tough yards after contact. You mentioned the Bears depth chart. They shipped Jordan Howard out to Philadelphia, so they got Mike Davis there, kind of battling for that RB1 spot. So I would imagine Montgomery's talent might, you know, surpass him a bit. If not, it's the draft capital that he should be able to get enough opportunity to kind of maybe work his way through there. The pause for me is that there are some pass catchers in that offense as well. Then I look at Mitchell Trubisky, and I don't get too excited about them. But the idea is that Tariq Cohen, we saw what he did last year. So he's gonna siphon off that receiving work at the very least. And you want your first round running backs here to be able to, you know, stay in the field as often as possible, to work out of the backfield, to catch passes. Not to say that David Montgomery can't do that, but when you have an option like Cohen there as well, you know, you're going to want to feed those players. Cohen's talented in his own right. So he looks like the RB1, or should win that spot. Will be an interesting kind of early redraft target as well in that regard. But I might call him an RB1 with an asterisk of sorts next to him, because there are questions about his profile coming out in general. And this landing spot, while it's good, it's not necessarily great to me. This is a ranking where, even, you know, even as I was doing it, you know, months and months ago, and I look at it now, I don't feel great about it. But again, he's a running back who should see volume in an offense that I personally like, Matt Nagy as a coach, despite their quarterback play and all that stuff, and maybe what I think of their quarterback. But again, so he kind of checks those boxes for me. Not a player that I necessarily feel great about selecting, but I think this is probably the range where he's going to end up going.
I mean, yeah, you got to take him at the RB3 right now. I've got him. I would say at this point, his path to opportunity is obviously greater than Daryl Richardson, or excuse me, Daryl Henderson. Wow, mm-hmm. Daryl Richardson, what a blast from the past.
What are we doing? Yeah.
Then Daryl Henderson. But to me, I almost prefer Daryl Henderson. But the reality is, depending on what type of league you play in, David Montgomery is going to cost you more, obviously, because the Todd Gurley insulation factor. But, you know, news is coming out that David Montgomery is a slick pass catcher. But that's not surprising, because that's something that he did do back in college. That was one of sort of the hallmarks of his game. And yes, we talked about how he breaks tackles, and that's all well and fine, but he's got the agility score. It's 55th percentile. That's enough to get it done, but he's not a fast back. He doesn't have a ton of burst. This isn't a guy that's going to get a breakaway. So he feels like, if you're hoping for Kareem Hunt, good luck. Player profiler comps him to Carlos Hyde, and I think Carlos Hyde in his heydays would be a great player if you can get a healthy version of that. But I would just be cautious of David Montgomery going to a team, especially one with a guy in Riley Ridley who's going to suck up all the passing targets. I mean, the ball is just going to be funneled through Riley Ridley all day long. There's just no reason to draft anybody in Chicago. But it's a fair spot by you, man. I'm not big on David Montgomery, and I don't know that you were either. But in a class so thin with running backs that may be viable starters, he gets the nod here. So we're moving up. All right, you're QB1. We finally reached the QB1. There's not much of a debate here. Kyler Murray goes to Arizona, first pick in the NFL draft. J.J. Zacharyson said he could be as high as the RB6 by the end of the year. What's your take on Kyler Murray?
Yeah, he's gonna float right around that range for me too. QB5, QB6, something like that. Again, it goes back to the Konami code we talked about, Rich Rebar earlier, man. Dude penned one of the most influential articles out there years ago. And you know, rushing opportunities for quarterbacks, fantasy quarterbacks matter, man. Kyler Murray obviously has wheels. We saw what he did last year. We saw what he's done throughout his entire playing career, man. Awesome passer, awesome on the ground. I'm not going to sit here and break down film and stuff like that for you. You guys know exactly what Kyler Murray is. Arizona went quarterback early last year. new coach and went in there and they went quarterback early again, which you know should say a lot, obviously, as well. We talked about Andy Isabella in this show. We talked about Hakeem Butler a couple weeks ago. We know about Christian Kirk. We know about, you know, David Johnson bounce back here. This is an offense that should be super fun, super explosive. You know, we talked about grabbing some of these pass catchers as pieces. You know, I have no problem going Kyler Murray. Normally you don't see these quarterbacks high in these rookie rankings, but when you have you know, a set of wheels like Murray, when you can pass like Kyler Murray, man, that floor and that ceiling rise considerably. So I think that rank kind of reflects that. Playerprofiler.com, and I pull that up, the best comparable is Russell Wilson. So I'll kind of say that, and I'll let you kind of take it from there. But a player that I personally love, I'm excited to watch him this year, his rookie year, and a player that I have no problem investing in heavily for the future.
Yeah, if you're in a start one QB league, it's hard to invest too heavily in Murray. But the point here is, like you alluded to, the rushing production is just enormous. I mean, his upside will immediately be greater than many of the long-term veterans in this league. And even if his touchdowns are only half as many as Andrew Luck, his rushing will be 10 times that number. So there's a lot of upside here when you start to do the math on this. There's not much else that needs to be said, man. You know, he's compared to Russell Wilson. Russell's best in the league. I'm not even going to debate it. I don't want to hear anything. And Kyler Murray's a guy that if you can get your hands on him, if he's falling in your draft, when I start to get to that range where, again, in a one QB league, I'm personally not going to go for Kyler Murray before probably like 109, 110, 111 range. There's just, I want my running backs. You know, I want these guys. They're tougher to get. There's a lot of quarterbacks out there. With that weekly production, I know Kyler Murray could have a high floor, but it's all about getting points by any means necessary. I don't know. There's nothing else to say. It's a great spot. New coaching staff, a lot of hype around him, so rightfully so. Number one back taken in the class, but not the number one back on Ryan's list, Josh Jacobs to the Oakland Raiders. What's the deal here? Why do you got him at number two?
Yeah, a player that had, I think, polarizing in his own right. There were questions about his, you know, his volume, his production. You know, how come he wasn't on the field more if he was this great, you know, touted prospect? He didn't really work his way into that Alabama offense, you know, in any kind of notable fashion. So there again, we know about the pre-draft story. We also know that John Gruden pre-draft loved Josh Jacobs, and he made that investment 24th overall selection. So questions about his production, questions about his athleticism, all that aside, the draft capital might kind of trump that for most people. He goes to an offense which, again, we know about the Derek Carr questions. We know about John Gruden. This offense should be better on paper with these additions, Tyrell Williams, AB, an early Josh Jacobs investment here. So this offense could be fun for some weeks here. The idea is that Josh Jacobs is immediately in that RB1 chair. The only competition he really has, which is notable, is Jalen Richard, who PFF loves, man. One of the more efficient backs whenever he was given touches. We know he's a really good pass catcher as well. So he should, you know, siphon some of those early kind of receptions, unless, you know, Jacobs proves to be, you know, head and shoulders above him, which like, the draft capital would suggest. Everyone else in that backfield, man, Chris Warren, you know, Doug Martin, all those guys, none of those guys matter. So Josh Jacobs has, you know, kind of insulated volume. You know, he's protected by that draft capital. He's in an offense which should kind of tick up this year and the seasons going forward. So you alluded to it before. You want to invest in these running backs that have these clear volume roles. And Josh Jacobs is no exception.
Yeah, I love Josh Jacobs where he went. You know, he is a versatile player. He doesn't have the standout collegiate production. A lot of people ask, how was this possible? How did he get drafted where he did? And to be honest with you, I kind of feel like the Alvin Kamara thing is another reason why, you know, and the Kareem Hunt thing is why guys like this got a hit. Obviously, Kareem Hunt had tons of production, but you look at some of the athleticism. But when you look over at Alvin Kamara, limited collegiate production, but stood out in particular areas. And Josh Jacobs played big in big games. And he went to an offense that needed an infusion. It needed a run, you know, a running back that's tough, that can kind of do everything. And, you know, you've got him as your second back here. He could end up as, you know, a top 10 sort of opportunity player in the league potentially if he shows well. So I'm a fan and I'm definitely buying. Number two overall prospect, but your wide receiver one goes to New England. N'Keal Harry, the other player when I was talking about A.J. Brown that has sort of, to me, a can't-miss floor. It went to an awesome team, a great offense with a quarterback that we don't know how long he has left, probably another 15 years. Let's talk about N'Keal Harry, man, going to New England.
Yeah, and N'Keal Harry, man, you pop on a player profile over here and your eyes just light up. 88th percentile college dominator, 95th percentile breakout age, 98th percentile spark X score, best comparison, Allen Robinson, 6'2", 228. It's a player that on paper, everyone's gonna run to. He is the header boy over at breakout finder as well, man. He's up there catching a bag of money, man. He is definitely a baller. The pre-draft analysis was that, you know, there were concerns about kind of his build and his athleticism, his ability to separate off the line. None of that. I personally didn't get too hung up on that stuff. Where he wins is downfield at the catch point. You just throw it up there, man. He's going to make it happen as he always tended to do, and clearly athletic enough, given the spark score, and if you throw back and you run back the film, it's a player that's really good after the catch. I think you're probably going to talk about his ability and his impact on special teams as well. So just a player that checks those boxes for me, despite some kind of back and forth about his ability again off the line and how he's going to, you know, kind of transition to the next level. There are questions about that landing spot as well. Tom Brady, the Patriots' history of you know, selecting wide receivers early or lack thereof, their ability to kind of integrate those young wide receivers in the offense. Like I get all those narratives, and you kind of started to allude to it as well with Tom Brady. This offense is great because they have Tom Brady throwing the ball. Tom Brady's not going to play forever, so his long term impact might be in question. But again, I guess the idea is that this player is good enough. Obviously checks these boxes, breakout finder or otherwise, that, you know, his talent is gonna help help him withstand a quarterback change, wherever the case may be. So just a really interesting player. I think a player that's safely in that top five conversation. If you had him at two overall, like I did, or anywhere inside this top five, I think that's a smart pick. It's an obvious pick. So I would love to get your two cents on. I know it's a player that you were really high on yourself.
So, you know, when you talk about the narrative that the New England Patriots can't draft wide receivers, that's like saying that USC wide receivers bust or flop or aren't successful or injury riddled, and then a guy like Juju Smith-Schuster shows up and just destroys the whole narrative forever. N'Keal Harry is going to be the receiver that sort of breaks this narrative that the New England Patriots struggle to draft early round wide receivers and make them successful. And you brought it up too, the dynamic score for N'Keal Harry, not a monster score amongst this class, but don't forget that, you know, N'Keal Harry's a 6'2", 230-pound wide receiver who's out here running the ball in college and doing it well, running, you know, kick returns back to the house for touchdowns, you know, breaking guys off, flipping field, reversing it. I mean, his dynamic ability is evident. And I think there's people out there that were saying that his athleticism wasn't going to be great. They said that he wasn't dynamic. I mean, it is evident just because there isn't a ton of rushing production or kick return production. Well, you're not expecting that. This guy's 6'2", 230 pounds. It's freaky. You just don't see this. Then he goes to the combine, shows out, 98th percentile spark score. I mean, he's one of the better prospects that we've seen in quite some time. Last pick of the first round, but nonetheless, a first-round pick. New England Patriots do it again. They did it with Sony Michel the year before. Here we are this year with N'Keal Harry. And let's not forget, when you go to Football Outsiders, the New England Patriots last year ranked number one overall in pass protection. So This is a team that's giving Tom Brady time. He's got clean pockets. He's not being sacked. And N'Keal Harry is a nuanced player, and he's only going to get better studying under an offense with a football mind like Belichick and a quarterback like Brady. I think people sleeping on N'Keal Harry are going to pay the price, and it's mostly film grinders. I think the dynasty world understands that you're not taking another receiver before you're taking N'Keal Harry in this draft class. Now, had Harry gone in the 2020 class or the 2021 class, we might be having some conversations. But in this class where he landed, he's a lock, and it's no question. So whether you've got him at 101, 102, or 103, I don't think he goes later than 103 in most drafts. If you have the next guy we're going to talk about or Josh Jacobs ahead of him, understandably based on your roster, I get it. But N'Keal Harry's not slipping past 103. And neither should your number one player overall in this class, Miles Sanders to Philly. Tell me about Miles Sanders.
Yeah, Sanders is a guy that I was kind of banging the table for really, really early on in the process. Kind of got off him a little bit as I was kind of getting around to other players and stuff like that. But always a player that, especially in this running back class, which everyone, again, the narrative was that it was a bottom of the barrel class, and for the most part, that was the case. We know the athleticism certainly wasn't there in general for this class. Not a whole lot to get excited about. But Miles Sanders was one of the better athletes in this class, posting only a 77th percentile Spark X score, which kind of says all we need to say about the athleticism in this class overall if we're touting a Spark X score like that. But 5'11", 211 pounds, has that build that we like as far as, you know, a bell cow back. We know he's a more than capable receiver. The story pre-draft was that he was, you know, never going to hit that. He was never going to be Saquon Barkley, which yes, that was the case, and yes, he took a while to kind of get going because he was buried behind some guy named Saquon Barkley. So these are all fair points, but points that that, you know, I think people were kind of throwing out there and using him against him in a not very contextually correct way, whatever the case may be. So all that aside, draft capital was there, athleticism was there, production was there enough for me. You know, Doug Peterson hasn't had a running back to really hang his hat on. They did bring in Jordan Howard. The Jordan Howard investment, as you and I probably talked about in shows past, is only a fifth or sixth round selection. So they didn't necessarily invest heavily in Jordan Howard. Jordan Howard just more or less a middle of the road runner, given his time in Chicago and the reason probably why Chicago moved on for him anyways. But so Sanders could have an opportunity here to kind of kick open the door in an offense that gets Carson Wentz back on new money, assuming he's healthy. We know this offense should be one of the better ones in the league with Peterson calling plays. We know about Zach Ertz. We know about their pass catchers. So lands in a good spot, has the draft capital to back it up, has all those other boxes checked as well. It would surprise me, as you said before, that if he wasn't a top five, consensus top five player in this class for me.
Right, and this is a team last year that ranked number 17 in run blocking and then drafts Andre Dillard. We'll see where he plays because this is a team that has, you know, tackles on both sides. But another reason that we could see sort of an uptick here, I'm a fan of Miles Sanders, and you pretty much said it correctly, exactly. He played behind one of the best running backs we've ever seen come out of college, so it's not a surprise that his college production was, you know, non-existent. First couple years he was there, he joined Penn State with Saquon Barkley. He knew, they kind of agreed that they were going to make this powerhouse duo. They knew what it was going to be. I don't think he ever knew that he was going to end up sort of buried for the duration of his career. But look, it didn't matter. The NFL still looked at him as a second-round talent. The Philadelphia Eagles, a team that needed some running back help, go and get this guy, and he can do everything. We've seen him catch. We've seen him run. You've seen his, you know, his dynamism in space. You touched on it, his spark score. I mean, this is a damn good athlete, if not one of the best running back athletes in this class, aside from, say, like a Justice Hill. But this guy's got the size. So, big fan of Miles Sanders. If you're taking him at 101, I'm not surprised. I wouldn't knock it one bit. But go out and get these guys where you can. I mean, before preseason hits and they break off some big plays, because, yes, they cost a little bit now, but they're going to be even more expensive. We haven't hit the ceiling of value on many of these players yet. All it takes is one big run in the preseason and suddenly, boom, they're twice as expensive, or you can't get them, or somebody's not selling them. So if you're looking to offload some veteran talent and maybe some picks or something, this is the type of guy I'm chasing. So, man, that was quick and easy.
Painless.
A little too painless.
Painless.
Listen, man, you know, the show's been doing really well. I always text Ryan, like, how many plays it's getting. It's crushing it right now. And obviously, we're bringing on good guests. People love that. We've got a big guest coming on next week. Is that true?
We do. We won't spill too many beans here, but we got another one, fun one lined up for all our pals, for sure.
Yeah. We got no name dropping, but we've got a big fish again. That's what we do on here.
We do, man. Sitting out here casting.
Big fish. Yeah. That's it, man. We just got bobbers in the water. So, you know, again, man, rate it, review it, you know, tweet at us. Graphics are coming all the time. Ryan's got his ranks coming out. 2020, he's got 2021. I think this guy did a 2020. He might have done a 2032. This guy's going
really,
to junior highs.
Really, really, really big loser stuff, bro.
He's casing the junior highs right now over that chain link fence. He's getting Tommy Williams, man. Keep an eye out. He's like 11 years old.
Circle
right
him. Highlight him. Yeah, highlight him.
Circle him. Ryan called him first. And one of these days, I'm going to try and get Fusu Vu on here because he's dropping some insane Jerry Judy takes.
He's got the heat already. I'm a little upset at him.
He's coming out of the gate just throwing hands. They're garbage. He's missing wildly. You can't shoot from the hip and miss everything. You know, unless you're Rambo and you got infinite rounds and you don't mind shooting through a wall because you're not worried about what's on the other side of it, fine. But Fusu Vu, you're on notice, bro. I'm gonna get you on the show
soon, very soon, my friend. We're gonna have some logical discourse here about Jerry Jr. A couple of these other guys, man. I am again. Fusu Vu, man. He gets. I know people have their own opinions of him, man. I personally dig his passion, man. He's a very unique thinker. He thinks for himself, and he's got these opinions, man. The Jerry Judy one is absolutely trash, and I'm gonna let him know about it. But man, he's definitely someone fun to kind of pick his brain. He's deep in the Devy world, man. So yeah, a lot of respect for him and kind of what he does. So very, very excited.
He only sees in black and white, and I can't wait to get him on the show and corner him with a bag of sweet Valencia oranges. Just take him out the right way. That won't leave a bruise. All right, man. Well, once again, another great Breakout Finder video cast. Again, check out all the media stuff. The website is coming. I know I say this every week. Big things are coming. Just hold on strong. Keep sharing this with your friends and family. And don't Jason Pierre-Paul yourself this coming 4th of July.
What an incredible and announcement at the end of the show, man. Well done. Well done, Nato.
Be safe with the fireworks, folks. Dangerous proposition there. All right, man. See you guys next week.